Fear the Walking Dead. Pillars of Salt is over, but we are just getting started here on the Fear the Walking Dead post-show recap. And now, here are the guys with ratty hair ready to go. I'm Rob Sisterman. Here is Alex Kidwell and Josh Wigler. How are you?
My hair's so good right now. Looks real good right now.
Yeah.
I miss my ratty hair. I used to have a nice
I wasn't going to be the one who said anything, but I did think it was kind of mean to introduce Alex in this way.
Oh, I'm so, wow.
There's no problem. You set me up and I'll knock me down.
Okay.
No worries.
Fair enough. And we have a tall glass of ice water ready to go on Fear the Walking Dead. Only 2 weeks left of Fear the Walking Dead here in 2016, Alex.
Yeah, how about that? 2 weeks, but three episodes. So that last week is going to be jam-packed.
Josh,
maybe?
Do you think there's any possibility of a AMC-style Mr. Robot switch-up where they decide, hey, what are we doing with 2 hours of Fear the Walking Dead in one night? We should split up this finale.
Yeah, they're going to break the finale in half and air it across 2 weeks. That feels like a really good thing for all of us to have a little bit more Fear the Walking Dead in our lives. I think that everyone is going to be really, really on board with that decision.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was probably a tricky night for Fear the Walking Dead because it was airing head-to-head with the 2016 Emmy Awards. So fans of great drama were really torn where to put their attention.
Yeah, difficult night. You know, you really have to make a choice there. And I'm sure also for, you know, the makers of Fear the Walking Dead that have so much invested in such a momentous night as the Emmys. Probably hard to throw an episode up against the Emmys. But what are you going to do? What did you choose, Rob? Which one did you watch live?
I watched neither live, and I watched the DVR of Fear the Walking Dead this morning, and I edited a podcast of the Emmys from last night.
Fair enough.
Yeah. That's where I get my news from. Mike Bloom, Jeremiah Panhorst, and Lita Brillman. That's where I go to get all my entertainment news.
That's the source. That's the source. It's a good source.
Well, anyway, all right. So let's talk through what happened on Fear of the Walking Dead, of course. If you want to subscribe to our ongoing coverage of Fear of the Walking Dead, you can go to postshowrecaps.com/TWDiTunes. So we really have been sticking to sort of two stories all season long, but this week I feel like we had three different ones, which I feel like is breaking the trend a little bit here, where we had stuff going on at the hotel, and then even Madison and Elena ended up leaving the hotel, and then we had stuff going on with Nick back at the Colonia, and it was the return of Ophelia, Josh!
Oh, I'm feeling that. That was great. Great to have Ophelia back in the mix. Very thankful that it doesn't seem like it's just going to be the 90-minute Ophelia flashback
episode. I thought we were going there. I really did. I said, oh my God. We joked around about the 90-minute Ophelia standalone episode.
But we willed it into existence. Like, we brought that to life. We were so close. It was very scary. That was the scariest moment of the season so far.
I wish you hadn't.
Alex, let me ask you about the Ophelia flashbacks here in this episode, because I'm really a bit unclear as to what purpose did they serve. We saw Ophelia run away last week, and then we saw her in two different flashback scenes where one, she appeared to be in a restaurant where she was with a guy who was proposing to her, and then we saw her with her mom, and then ultimately she got on the road, presumably leaving Old Mexico, heading back to New Mexico. But I'm very confused because the Salazars weren't living in New Mexico at the time that we ended up seeing them at the start of Fear the Walking Dead. So did you get a lot out of the Ophelia backstory?
Well, definitely not. I mean, I might have understood it a little bit better than you did in that I think
not saying
what
much.
Yeah, I know. I think the New Mexico thing was that the guy was like trying to get her to start a new life with him in New Mexico, but she didn't want to leave her parents.
Wait,
in
so
L.A.
Is New Mexico literally New Mexico, or is New We Will Go to America and Make a New Mexico?
I think it's probably literal. I don't think he was, you know, that guy struck me as American, so I don't think he's trying to, you know, Che Guevara it up anytime soon or anything.
Very
like that.
Ambitious plan if that's what he's up to. I mean, Ophelia really went for somebody who dreams big.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, ultimately, you know, when you're asking about, like, what was the purpose of this, I don't have a good answer for you, and all I can say is maybe we're going to find out later. I think the flashback to her with her mother and her mother talking about the hardship they've endured and stuff, like, just made me think, like, maybe we really haven't seen the last of Daniel Salazar.
Oh, definitely not. But Josh, how the hell do you give me a flashback on Fear the Walking Dead of Ophelia growing up in her childhood home and don't give me Daniel Salazar?
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, I think that the show, I think absolutely Daniel Salazar is going to come back. I don't think he's going to come back this season. I think if you're following what Dave Erickson, the showrunner, has said, and he's been pretty explicit about, I don't know.
The arguably second best character on this show, and you're like, you know what? Let's take him off the table this season.
You know,
we don't need him. It's an embarrassment of riches.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder and all of that, but we were already very fond of Daniel Salazar, so the absence makes the heart grow frustrated in that regard, I think. I think that the idea is to keep him off the table until season three, and I think that even seeing him in flashback form, I feel like that's more than the show wants to give us with Salazar. I don't love it because I loved Salazar, and it would be great to have him back in the mix, and it would have been great to check in with him there. Certainly Ophelia's mom has been, you know, she's been deceased for well over a season at this point. We haven't checked in on her in forever, and it's cool to, you know, go back and see her, I guess, but the more pressing person, of course, is Daniel. You know, that is the person that is still on our minds as we're watching Fear the Walking Dead. Why not check back in with him? So I wish that that had been the move. I wish that it had been some sort of interaction between Ophelia and her father, considering he's probably still out there somehow, somewhere, some way. But that's not what they did. They went in another direction, and that's okay. Sometimes that happens.
I mean, Alex, it seems so odd that Ophelia suddenly has, like, this long-lost love that she's looking for. Like, remember when she was, like, dating that army guy after everything went down when they were sort of boxed in?
Yeah, you know, I think this is just like her kind of having kind of a one woman pity party right now a bit. Like, you know, this, like, everything that could have been is flashing by right now. Like the life that she could have had and I guess, you know, assumedly turned down so she could stay with her parents because they needed her. Or, you know, if something else happens that we'll find out, I don't know, maybe Daniel kills the guy. Or like if, you know, just, you know, any of these relationships, any of these kind of like opportunities in the past, now in this new world, like they have to seem like, you know, why didn't I take that chance or why didn't I do that thing? Like it's so meaningless now in hindsight.
Josh, I watched a couple of minutes of Fear the Talking Dead last night.
Oh, yes. You haven't really given us a check-in on that forever. How's really it going? How is Fear
bad,
the Talking Dead?
Bad. I was watching just the opening and Chris Hardwick again, and he doesn't look like he's happy on Fear the Talking Dead.
Hostage situation.
I feel like I'm like Trump. I'm like talking about like I could read Chris Hardwick's body language. He's not happy. He's like, believe me, trust me, I can tell he's not happy. But he's says like opening the show, he's like, oh, and then Ophelia, we were missing her. Where has she been? And we found her. She came back, and she's a badass now. Like what? Where did we get that from? Did anything happened with Ophelia? She siphoned gas out of a car.
That was cool. That was really.
She didn't.
A lot of gas siphoning this week.
I probably would have struggled with that. That's gross.
That was fairly sicky nar nar. I thought of Ophelia to do that, but I think, you know, she stole the car. She's gone on her own. She's going rogue. She's deciding to be independent. Yes, it absolutely is stealing a car.
Aren't all the cars kind of like a city bike at this point?
They are, but like you're stealing the city bike at this point. Like you're stealing the stolen vehicle that belongs currently to people that you're supposed to care about, or at least that you've been traveling with for some time. You know, they were schlepping you around on their boat for a while you were nursing a gunshot wound, and you're just going to take their car? That's a pretty crappy thing to do. So I don't know if I want to say that's badass, but she's certainly struck out on her own. She's independent now. She's going off to who knows where all by herself, maybe leaving the show. That's a possibility. What do you think of the possibility that we just never see Ophelia again? Was this Ophelia's send-off? Just a couple of scenes in this episode and Ophelia, see you later.
No way. We're following her. We're going to go all the way to her. She's going to be like the new Morgan off on her own, and we're going to follow her adventures all
Ophelia.
The way through back to New York.
Me, Ophelia.
No, in all seriousness, I think
Different Morgan.
I bet she runs into Travis and Chris. I think that's how we end up getting them back into this story. And then Travis convinces her to turn around and go find Maddie.
But that's assuming that that Chris is still alive, right? I mean, based on the ending of this episode, I know I'm jumping ahead. Chris may, you know, he's MIA at the end of the episode. Maybe he's already been KIA'd.
Yeah, sad Travis walking alone.
All. Yeah, he knew it all.
Yeah.
He thought he knew it all.
He thought he knew it all. No, Chris is not dead.
We'll talk about it. We'll get into it. Let's stay on track.
I don't know if there's anything else to say with Ophelia. She's off to New York. I think she runs into Travis. I mean, do you guys think there's any chance she makes it across the border?
I genuinely think it's not impossible. I mean, I would really like it if we never saw her again. And I don't mean to be
nobody asked what you would like.
I'm just thinking out loud. You know, I feel like it would be great to, you know, this show has a problem with many of its characters, and I think Ophelia has been one of the most problematic. And you have no idea what to do with her. You have no idea what she's doing on the show. And she's an easy character to kill off in that regard, especially because she's the only Salazar still standing, as far as we know, that we think Daniel's still out there. So it's an opportunity to remove her from the story. If they could do that bloodlessly, if they can do that in a non-violent way and just let her ride off into adventures unknown, and in our minds we can fanfic all day about what happened to Ophelia, I think that's my preferred outcome. I wouldn't be shocked if we never see her again. I do think we probably will, but I wouldn't be stunned if that was it for Ophelia.
All right, well, let's move on, and let's talk about what's going on with Madison and the hotel, because...
Madison,
yeah. Well, everything was all honky-dory. We had a great montage, and Alex, you know that right after a montage on Fear the Walking Dead, something bad is bound to happen.
Yeah, especially when that montage has some, like, upbeat, you know, kind of cleaning up the house type of like Breakfast Club theme music going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Are they going to reopen the hotel? It was really like a whole, I wrote in my notes, extreme hotel makeover. So they got everything up and running and everything looked honky dory, and Strand's Bar is open for business. The whole idea of the premise of the ice machine at the hotel seems like a massive waste of resources. Am I wrong on this?
Hey, you want to call that a waste of resources? Alicia's phone is charged, Rob. Did you notice that? I caught that.
That's funny. Well, we know how much Alicia likes to call strange boys. So, you know, she's just trying to get in place for that again.
Yeah. So I have no idea what sort of system that they're going in. And like they said, okay, what we need to do is get the power running so we can boil water and make ice. Like, pick one. Pick one. Are you heating water or cooling all the water? Stop doing both. We're getting nowhere.
Pretty plush situation when you're in the zombie apocalypse and you are like sucking on ice cubes. You
Zero
are good on
game.
That. Yeah, like you're like really nursing like the ice cubes at the bottom of your glass, and that's taking like an hour to go through all of that. Like, that's pretty good. This is a pretty cushy situation they found themselves in.
It's just the whole ice thing, that where the ice is just being like thrown about, where it's like, okay, if you had ice in this situation, like I would feel like that still the drinking water is probably a bit of a premium. I don't know if you would be using all of the ice to make different cocktails at Strand's Bar.
Well, I guess... they've got a healthy generator and they feel confident about its longevity for the meantime.
I guess so. But anyway, so here comes Suella Mishki and knock, knock at the door. And then she shivs Strand. You killed my daughter. Now you did it. Now, why did they have to tell her that Strand took out zombie Suella Mishki's daughter?
Yeah, well, my biggest gripe, I think my biggest grievance is with the show for putting Strand in this much jeopardy. You know, we already talked about how upset we are that Daniel Salazar wasn't on the show in this flashback scene and that he's not on the show right now. And now you're putting Strand's life on the line. Like, that's where we are. Please don't. Please no, don't. I'm not happy about this at all.
Me neither.
I have no fear that Strand is going to die here. So why are we doing this to Strand? Why do we? Didn't we already have an episode in season two where he was like out in the water and he was incapacitated and he was on completely bedridden already for an episode this season? Why did we go back to this well, Alex?
Strand's problems occur horizontally.
I guess so. Yeah. Strand has been in bed most of the season, pretty much like every other episode, whether he's with Thomas Abigail or whether he is like recovering from being out at sea or now that he's been stabbed. Boy, it's been a tough season for Strand.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Stranded.
I was wondering where you were going with that, because these were all unpleasant situations. You would think that lying down in bed, that would be a great thing. But every time that he's been in bed, it's been very, very unpleasant and uncomfortable for him. I feel
unpleasant.
Bad for Strand.
Yeah.
Unpleasant.
And
it's nap
so
time.
We have now Maddie is the leader of this group, and she wants swift justice on Mrs. Stowe. Mrs. Stowe stabbed me. She seems to be on the loose, though. I feel like that we don't have her whereabouts. Alex, do you feel like that she's going to create more problems?
Probably. She's definitely, I think they described her as deranged, and I think that's an accurate description.
Yeah. Nobody else seems that concerned about it. They're like, she's just eccentric. She just stabs people sometimes. It's not that big a deal, Josh.
And what's the ultimate decision on this? They're going to put her on lockdown, like they are imprisoning her in one of the rooms, and that is the judgment that has been passed down upon Sue Ellen or whatever the heck her name is. That's what we're doing with her. We're not kicking her out.
Just kill her. Am I wrong on this?
I mean, that feels aggressive, Rob.
I mean,
that feels like an aggressive decision.
She's lost it. I don't know. Well, what do you do with her?
The problem is, if you do that, then you risk losing Oscar and these other guys that have begun to trust you and work with you, including that guy who has medical knowledge. That guy's important.
All right,
that
well,
guy
we have all
is
the
really
keys?
Important.
Can we just lock her up somewhere?
Yeah, well, that's what they're doing. They're locking her up. They're going to lock her up for a little while. You know, she'll get room service and stuff. It's probably not very different from what her existence was in the weeks leading up to Madison and company coming to the hotel. Like, they were on lockdown for a while, so she's used to it. She'll be okay. That'll be all right. Maybe she'll have some time to get over everything with Strand. Maybe Strand can pay her a visit once in a while and, like, speak through the door and in his very convincing way convince her that he's not such a bad guy, and then she can be reintegrated into the society. That feels like that would be a pleasant outcome for everybody involved.
Ooh, I don't know if I'd risk that if I'm Strand. This woman is going to be alone with nothing but her thoughts and cocktails on the balcony.
But with a door between you and Strand, who is a closer, and she is definitely a buyer. She is a buyer. So I think that he will be able to close the deal and sell her on the fact that he's not so bad.
Okay. I want to rant about Madison at the grocery store, but I feel like to do there, we need to set up the Nick storyline.
Okay, so set it up and then please give us the rant, because I would like to hear this rant that you would like to deliver.
First off, with the Nick storyline, who is this Francisco guy? Why did he leave, Alex?
So he was one of the guys, you know, there was a couple of guys with Luciana when she found Nick. One of them they found in pieces later. And that was her brother, I believe. That was someone she cared about a lot. And then the other one was Francisco. Francisco is a guy who makes runs just like she makes runs. And he's a very vital member of this community. And it seems like he saw the writing on the wall that, you know, trouble was coming, that they're running out of meds. Like, he knows some things that most members of that colony wouldn't know, because he's in a position like Luciana to have more knowledge of kind of Alejandra's operations. So, yeah, I think he's scared. He sees what's coming the way Nick sees what's coming, and he's not in denial the way Alejandra might be, and he's trying to get out while there's still a chance, and they get caught.
Josh, is this show unnecessarily complicated at times, or am I losing? And it could be both. The answer could be both, but I feel like that, you know, at least 40% of the time I'm watching this show, I'm like, wait, who's this guy? Who is this?
Yeah, there's a lot of characters on Fear the Walking Dead.
There really are.
and especially right now, there's a lot of characters. I mean, it's already been enough to keep track of with just like sort of the blended family. But now you've got all of these people in the Colonia. You've got the people at the supermarket. You've got these factions at the hotel. You've got the three douche bros hanging out with Travis and Chris. There's a lot to keep track of right now. So yeah, this is, you know, I thought that the scene actually was really good. The way that the episode opened up. Yeah, it's opening up on characters we don't know anything about, but the idea of like two parents having to like ferret their daughter, their crying daughter, through a pool of walkers, basically like a whole parking lot filled with walkers, and they have to do the blood and guts trick with her, and she can't cry or else we're gonna get a repeat of The Walking Dead season 6B premiere. I thought that was cool. I thought that they did a good job with that. I thought it was scary. I thought that it was a great sort of standalone zombie story if you just viewed it in that that way disconnected from Fear the Walking Dead. I have no complaints with how that was done, other than it was with characters that we knew nothing about. So I only care about that in connection to Fear the Walking Dead. But as its own isolated thing, I thought it was a pretty good scene.
That little girl really showed Sam how it's done.
I was going to say, I bet that kid Sam, I bet he watches these shows. And it's like, how did I die? How come I died? I barely did anything. And I said, Mom. And then I got killed. And my mom got killed. Everybody got killed. And I feel like that, you know, on Fear the Walking Dead, everybody is just like willy-nilly with this, like, just dab a little on you. You're good.
Right, yeah. I don't understand why everything's just slower when it's hot, I guess. I don't know.
It's
maybe
interesting.
I don't know how to explain
they're
it.
They're lethargic, you're saying.
Yeah.
It's interesting that Fear the Walking Dead has like really committed to this. I remember when Walking Dead brought it back, when it brought back the guts and gore trick that Rick and Glenn implement early on in season one of the first, I think it was the second episode of the whole show. And everyone's wondering, why don't you guys just do that all the time? That seems to work really, really well. You could just be masked by these walkers. And it doesn't even look like you have to put that much on you in order to, not on this show at least. So Fear the Walking Dead has just like gone all in on that trick. And I wonder if we'll see more of it on the proper Walking Dead now that this seems to be such a fundamental part of surviving in the zombie apocalypse. It's like all these years later, the writers' rooms for these shows realized, oh yeah, that's a thing we can do. Let's do that all the time. It's happening so often on Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, it's really, I was going to get worked up about it, but I don't even have the energy for it because it's just like, okay, well, maybe because Nick brought it into this group and then it's sort of like the cool thing to do because they're like, oh, you can do this? Okay, well, now let's get brazen with it that Nick, if this idiot Nick can do it, we can all do it and get out of here.
Yeah, Gringito can figure it out. Yeah. Why can't I?
If Gringito... but the Nick and Luciana relationship, right? It's hot and heavy over there with those two. I have nothing actually to say about this. It just seems like, how old is she? What is he, like 17, Nick?
New theory. Luciana is the one who bit Alejandro because of how she bit Nick's mouth during that hot, steamy makeout sesh.
Yeah.
And according to Wikipedia, Nick is 19, and you know, I guess she's in her, you know, early mid 20s. So yeah,
okay, good for Nick. Anyway, so I'm very annoyed with Nick and his whole attitude.
Are you? Are you really? I had no idea in the colony
that he's really just like come in and is taking like a real hard line with Alejandro. He's like, hey, I'm tired of nobody listening to me around here. You know, when I show up as a complete stranger from out of nowhere, I expect to be calling the shots in any civilization within a matter of days. Nobody's listening
to me.
Chicken
Little, Rob. The sky actually is falling, and he's telling everybody, and no one's listening to him. And then at the end of the episode, he's proven right. That's the problem.
Why should anybody listen to Nick, Alex? You're saying because he's right?
I mean, that's a good reason to listen to a person, but even if, you know... I think the problem is when you listen to the arguments on both sides, Alejandro's argument is, let's just assume they won't find us, while Nick's argument is more of a, let's prepare for the worst case scenario, and this is the kind of world where you do that.
To be fair, Alejandro is working under the assumption that, everybody that's been out into the world has been very careful and hasn't pissed off the cartel and made it really easy for them to find us. And he doesn't know that this idiot, Nick, went off and then he pissed them off with the whole Drake's coffee cake business back at the supermarket. And then like they when they're looking with binoculars, who's the one sticking out like a sore thumb, Josh?
Nick. Nick.
It's a fair point.
So Alejandro, I mean, that if everybody was listening to Alejandro, I think things would be fine here. He doesn't realize that it's Nick who's completely upsetting the grocery cart. I don't know.
And he, he seems to not be feeling well or something. Did you notice that? He's like sweating and stuff. I was wondering do you think he actually did get bitten and he's just like going to have like a month's delayed reaction or something?
It's a slow burn.
Maybe
Alejandro.
It truly is a genetic effect, and we just learned that some people turn in seconds, and some people it takes like a year.
Yeah. So, but what is Nick's plan? He wants to go get a jump on the cartel, or he just needs to give them more oxy, Alex?
I think he feels like they need water, and that, you know, a trade needs to be made sooner. They're going to run out of water, and then also a delivery was expected. So if they don't show up with the delivery on a day that they promise, then the cartel is going to come looking. I think that's the fear.
Okay. All right, well, let's get to the grocery store with the cartel, because it just so happens that our good friend Antonio has set up shop, and Antonio happens to be Hector's brother who was with them, and then he left, and then he found a new, like, he set up a new business all of a sudden. Josh, do I have all this correct?
I don't know if you have that correct. I'll text Antonio now and see if he can just verify the details of his current occupation. But he might be a little busy rewatching every episode of Scream Queens right now. So,
all right, so Alex, can you verify this? So Antonio is the brother of Hector, who was also a hotel employee at the hotel. Yeah. And so it's that he got into a disagreement with Elena post-apocalypse, and then he left and then set up and took up with this grocery store. I mean, how many weeks have passed since the zombie apocalypse? Has it been 6 weeks?
Oh, I got to think so at this point.
Okay.
It's been a lot longer than 6 weeks.
Got
to imagine.
Months.
I mean, there was a time jump in the first season. Like, I feel like we're months into this thing by now.
Okay. All right. Well, it doesn't feel like that much time has gone by.
Sometimes it does not. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it feels like no time at all has passed.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I do feel like, you know, and it's interesting because I think it parallels Nick in some ways, that this guy had, you know, at some point a falling out in an argument with his brother and with his aunt about, we need to join up with this gang. There's safety in numbers. They have guns. I know it's not ideal because they're bad people, but they will protect us, versus, no, we're not going there. We're not going to do that. That's not a good idea. And then you kind of saw a similar situation with Nick wanting to just go off on his own and separate from his family as well. And you're seeing Hector resenting Antonio a bit, and you're seeing Alicia maybe starting to do that with Nick as well for the choices he's made.
Well, we get to the supermarket, and it just so happens that, you know, everybody, it's like, you know, the local general store. Everybody comes to Antonio's for everything that they need. And so we just happen to need this red blood cell producing medication. Elena happens to know just the place, and she goes there, and as they are loudly interrogating prisoners there in Francisco, that there is a translation that's overheard of ratty hair, that the gringo with the ratty hair, and Madison,
it's a great song,
immediately knows this is Nick. I need to bust into this interrogation now and ask the interrogator, put the mouth shoes on the other foot.
Yes.
Now you'll answer some questions.
Nobody expects the Madison Inquisition.
Really a move with a high percentage for success.
I mean, how is she not dead? Why do they just not kill her on the spot?
Yeah, you would think that's probably the move. These guys don't really have much of a reason other than, you know, they want to keep Antonio happy, maybe, and killing his aunt or whatever is not going to be a great look for that and her aunt's friend. So maybe that's why. But very, very bold move on Madison's part to just run through and talk to this interrogator. But she's desperate. She hears something that sounds like the description of her son, linked to some sort of drug culture. It's probably not a bad guess that, you know, this guy could be Nick. So she's exploring every opportunity. It's her son, so of course she's going to be interested in trying to figure out where he is. But the way she went about it, you know, definitely could use some work next time. If she really wants to knock on somebody's door and get their attention, there's probably more polite, subtle ways of getting the information she wanted to get right there.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I mean, I feel like that if I'm in some sort of a situation, you know, as a parent, and, you know, I am trying to pick up some items at some sort of cartel grocery store, general store as it is, and, you know, I hear some sort of interrogation going on, I think I'm sort of like politely like, hey, I'm sorry, am I interrupting something in here? I apologize. I had a quick question. I heard you mention a white person with ratty hair who brings you drugs.
It just so happens that my son is a white person with ratty hair who brings people drugs.
Yeah. Do you have any information about the whereabouts? Oh, like, oh, you're looking for him too? Okay, well, as you were, okay, if you don't know anything, then that's fine.
And the other thing, too, is like the context of the interrogation. Doesn't it make it sound like if these guys know where Nick is, it might not be very good for Nick. Like, it could be very bad for wherever Nick
right.
is at. So she's, like, putting this guy on blast and, like, double interrogating this guy in the middle of an interrogation. And if he gives up that information, then the people who run the supermarket are like, sweet, cool, we're going to go there first, probably kill Madison before we even leave the room. And now we're also going to kill Nick and all of his people. So great job, Madison. If that had worked out for you, you and your son would probably be dead.
Well, it is it's a total panicked reaction, right? I mean, it's very clear, I think, from her reaction here that she regrets letting Nick go, that she feels like that was a mistake and that's on her and that she has to right that wrong somehow. I think that's pretty evident to me, at least, and that, you know, this is like her opportunity. Like, she has, like, she was thinking, you know, there may never be a chance I'll see my son again. And then here's kind of like something, some glimmer of hope that's dropped in her lap. And so I don't, you know, it's not logical, but. The parent-child relationship, I could kind of understand it. And I think, you know, parent-child relationships was something that was touched on in many ways in this episode. And, you know, one thing I think is interesting is, yeah, the fact that they didn't kill her. I mean, for all the setup that this cartel or this, you know, gang is the big evil conglomerate of this show, we don't necessarily know that for sure. I mean, they're certainly not good guys, but it might be possible that they don't just kill to kill. Like, maybe they're just about assimilating resources, and if you will give up what you have, then they'll let you go. I mean, we don't really know enough about these guys to say one way or the other whether or not it makes sense for them to just gun down Madison, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah. Josh, is these guys need oxy? Is that holding your attention in terms of the gravity of the post-zombie apocalypse?
You don't know. Not really. It's not. But, I mean, I do think that we're starting to see threads come together, at least, for how this season is going to finish out, I think. I think we're starting to see the pieces in place for how people are going to be able to get back together. Like, now Madison at least has a hunch of where Nick is. Has a hunch of where Nick might be. No, Alicia has the hunch.
Yeah.
So Madison at least has an idea of where her son is located. We know that he's not that far away, that Elena knew about Tijuana the whole time. So you can see how Nick and that storyline, how the Madison and Nick storylines are going to collide. And by the end of the episode, too, now Madison's hotel is on Travis's radar. So you're seeing how all of these people are coming back together, how exactly it takes shape, what sort of battle occurs. Is it going to be the hotel versus the supermarket? Like, what's going to go on there? I'm kind of interested in that. But in terms of, like, oh no, the people at the supermarket are going to run out of their drug and that's going to be really ugly, I'm not as compelled by that. But I am interested to find out how all of these threads are actually going to tie together. And I think that we're starting to see how that's going to work.
I was just going to say, I'm kind of reminded of, you know, I guess it was like episode 5 of season 1. I believe it's called Vatos in the original Walking Dead. And, you know, this is a group of gangbangers that kind of comes and attacks Rick's group and takes their stuff and seems like an evil group. And then it turns out they've just, like, need medication for their dying grandmothers and stuff. Like, I could see that for sure.
So is this Vatos Redux? This is Vatos Part 2? Because that, to me, feels inadvisable to go back to the Vatos well.
I don't know. I mean, you know,
not my favorite storyline in Walking Dead history.
I could see, like, by the end, like, this whole season, right, we've been thinking that these gangbangers or whatever are the, you know, the evil face. And then, you know, maybe we, towards the end, we, like, get to actually know them and find out that there's something much bigger and much more evil than them that they're required to pay tribute to or something. I could see it going that way.
Oh, my God.
My God.
The Negan of Mexico.
Yeah, the demon. All right. So then this is the part of the episode that, and again, I am a Madison fan. I love Madison, and it pains me to have to be out on Team Madison in this episode, because she came back, and Elena, I thought, had some really good points about Madison's behavior, and Madison is just completely on tilt, even full tilt, Josh, and she decides this is her new plan. She needs to light the sign to the hotel, because that way Nick will know to go to the hotel. And then it will be like a beacon in the night that will only bring Nick to the hotel.
He's the only
light
one.
The beacons.
Yeah, he's the only one. Alert,
yes.
Gondor. Questionable choice. But in following Alex's thread, I think panic, desperation, that's where Madison is right now. Obviously not thinking clearly, because that is not a level-headed thing to do. First of all, wasting power in the middle of the night, possibly attracting all sorts of bad business. Who knows who's going to see that thing? Very lucky that Travis sees it. That's great. That's fantastic news for Madison. But I think it's just, it's not a good move. You have no idea who's going to come for you at this point. And you've got so many desirable things in that hotel. You've got ice. What's going to happen to the ice when the ice raiders show up? So yeah, bad call, bad choice, not great. I think it's interesting in terms of you gotta imagine that was like a signal flare for some bad guys, and that's going to be something that's gonna come home to roost.
And the part of this episode that I did actually like is this conversation that happens between Maddie and Alicia, where Maddie is trying to explain her crazy actions to Alicia and saying like, "Hey, he's my kid. I have to." And she's like, "Well, I'm your kid too, and you're gonna get me killed if you keep doing what you're doing." And it's a real like a prodigal offspring story of, you know, that Maddie wants Nick to come back because he left, but she's really ignoring the kid that didn't leave.
Yeah, stop ignoring Alicia. She's the best character on the show
right now.
The best
kid you have on
yes,
this show.
Without question. So, no, I've been Team Alicia throughout all these podcasts this half of the season.
Although, you know, Alicia surfing to me, Josh, I gotta be honest.
You weren't a fan of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's like recreation. I guess that they're not afraid of the water anymore.
I don't understand why if we have like downtime, we have to act like, okay, now nothing is wrong. Like, can't we just have either like we're in full panic, there's zombies, or, you know, let's fill up the bar with ice. Let's go surfing. Let's go parasailing because there's no zombies here right now.
They're going to go parasailing.
Somebody else is watering the crops that day. We saw that.
So to speak.
She's not on crop duty that day, Rob.
Okay. I guess
give her a break.
She had a day off.
Would
you go surfing off that pier, Alex, after all those walkers went in the water in the last episode?
Well, I wouldn't go surfing off that pier to begin with because there's a riptide. But no, I still wouldn't do that.
Yeah. So, all right. So then at the end of the episode, then Travis ends up seeing the sign and like, oh, a hotel with a light on. My wife
somewhere
must be there.
Somewhere I can rest my tired feet.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Give my feet a break. It's interesting that Travis is alone. You know, last time we saw Travis, he was standing over the body of an innocent man who was shot to death by his own son, who has now been indoctrinated into the cult of the douche bros.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the cult of the douche bros? Where is Chris? Why is Travis alone? So I'm wondering if this next episode or in one of these next episodes, we will see whatever happened next. We'll see how that played out. We'll go back in time a little bit, 90-minute flashback episode style. Tabitha the Goat is involved. And we will see how Travis broke up with Chris. And I'm just wondering, I'm putting it out there. Are we going to see the death of Chris? Is that why Travis is on his own?
Not next week. If you were going to kill Chris, you do it in the season 2 finale, which is in 2 weeks. But we're getting the Travis backstory this week. And then it's a 2-hour episode the following week. So I don't think that they're going to kill Chris based on what we've seen. Maybe later on in the season, but I don't know. I'm out on killing Chris. I don't think it's
actually. I'm waiting for it.
Likely that he's off with the gang and that they separated on hostile terms.
Yes, I think so. What do you think of that?
Yeah.
I think it's reasonable. I mean, I could definitely see it going either way. You know, I feel like Travis, he walked so far on bleedy feet to find the kid. Like, is he really going to leave him for, you know, without him being dead? It's hard for me to see it. But the possibility
there, Alex, is, you know, he might not leave Chris, but would Chris leave Travis? Like, Chris could leave Travis, and Travis would have, you know, nothing to do with that. They're already disagreeing philosophically on what to do. You know, Travis wants to set up home base. Chris wants nothing to do with that. He does not consider Madison and company to be his family. He does not want to rejoin that family. Travis has obviously been pushing that pretty hard. Now Chris has his friends. Is he just going to go off into the night with his friends and leave his dad behind? Of all of the atrocities that Chris has committed so far, that's not too far afield. Like, I feel like leaving his dad alive but stranded, not with Strand, I feel like that's well within Chris's wheelhouse. So just trying to play out the scenario where there wasn't some sort of violent confrontation between Chris and Travis, which is where I'm hoping it's going. But I could see Chris just being like, "Yeah, Dad, peace out. go, you know, go do your thing. Good luck. I'm out. And, you know, leaving in the night, maybe a note behind, that would be nice at least. But I think that that's not impossible to see.
Yeah, no, I get that. I've gotten the sense that Travis is kind of intent on chasing him. You know, like Chris is trying to do his own thing and Travis wants to bring him back. So I feel like that could definitely happen, but Chris might need to like point a gun to his head or something and say like, leave me alone, Dad.
Totally. That's what I'm saying. Is like, I think that it would be a moment like that or like a middle of the night while you're sleeping. Adios, we're out of here. Like I could see that being possible too. And I think to that point of like Travis wouldn't stop searching for Chris, when we see him at the end of this episode looking at the hotel, who's to say he's not looking for Chris in that moment? So I think that that's possible, but I also think it's possible that Chris is toast. Certainly hope so.
And you know, I really do try to empathize with the parents, and my kids are really young, so you know, just to try to like project them as like almost adults and then saying like, okay, well, I'm leaving. I'm out of here. And it's just like having to deal with like, no, you're not. What do you mean you're leaving? You can't go anywhere. You have to listen to me. So I'm sure that that struggle is real. It just can be frustrating to watch on this show at times because we deal with so much of it.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think it's like the amount, it's the quantity of parental issues that is on the show. It's just it is a lot. I mean, it's a family drama. This is the family drama in the zombie apocalypse. That's the setup of the show. That's what we've been watching. It's never really veered away from that. So at least it's consistent in that regard. It just can be a little tough to watch sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And you know, this episode in particular, I think, was really set up to focus on regret and choices and, you know, questioning decisions that have been made in this world. You know, we talked before the podcast, like, what is the episode about? A pillar of salt. So I've been looking it up this entire time, and it is a biblical reference. Lot and his family left Sodom because it was a terrible place. And his wife looks back and turns into a pillar of salt because she looked back. So,
oh my God,
that is the metaphor here is that like kind of you look back and you're lost, I think.
Yeah. Well, who looked back? Ophelia?
Well, I think Madison is questioning her decisions right now. I think you're seeing maybe like the thing with Hector and his brother. I think that's, you know, a choice that was made that people are, you know, wondering if did I make the right choice there. I think there are several characters here. Alejandro with the Colonia. I think there are a lot of characters right now that have made choices that are leading them to places in the next couple episodes. And they're going to be wondering, you know, was that right or not?
Josh, what has to happen in these final 3 hours of the season for things to pick up on Fear the Walking Dead?
People need to die.
Okay. Well, now we're getting somewhere.
No, I mean, I've been saying this forever. Like, I think that the show has, and you mentioned it earlier in the podcast, there's so many people on this show. And I think certainly that's a problem on the main Walking Dead as well. But I think that we like most of those people for the most part, or at least invested in them. And I think that it's been problematic with some of these characters. It's been hard to invest in them. And I think we need to clear the decks a little bit. I think that needs to shake up some dynamics within this, you know, within this group. I think that losing Chris, I think losing Ophelia, those are steps in the right direction. Doubt we would ever lose Nick. But I think that you need to see some stakes and you need to see some of these main characters not make it out of this thing alive. I think that that would probably be a step in the right direction. I think getting a bunch of these people in the same location, bringing these stories back together, if they can do it in an interesting way, in a compelling way, that's going to be a good thing. Or it might just be like a boring, hey, we're back. Oh, what happened with you? Yeah, not much. We'll see how that plays out. But I think killing some key main characters would be a good move. Take it Travis. If you want to get rid of Travis, if you want to get rid of one of the parents, that's a good move as well. I think that the show needs to start culling the cast a little bit, and that will make, you know, whoever is left over, hopefully we would appreciate those characters a little bit more, and they would have a little bit more room to breathe and get some depth from the writers.
Just don't kill Strand. Don't kill Strand.
Just don't kill Strand. Absolutely.
Don't kill Strand. All right. Do we have a hashtag for this week's look into Fear the Walking Dead?
Don't kill Strand.
Don't kill Strand.
Hashtag don't kill Strand, please. Yeah. That's it.
It is a legitimate request and a hashtag.
I really don't want that to happen, please. So, yeah, keep them alive for everybody's sake.
Well, I am very much looking forward to hearing what your feedback is on this episode at postshowrecaps.com, because I definitely had gotten some feedback about if we should continue on with a Fear the Walking Dead recap podcast. And I got to say, I think it's really on the bubble heading towards season 3.
It's a bubble podcast for sure.
Yeah. Is it going the ways of the strain?
Strigoi!
Not the strand.
Strigoi!
How dare you.
Why, Alex, you love the strain?
No.
I don't know.
I haven't seen the strain. I cannot comment.
Okay. This is too much conversation about the strain. We must move on.
Yeah, but anyway, I'd love to have this conversation with you guys and let us know what you're thinking as well. If either A, we're being too hard on the show, or if B, you're enjoying this and you don't want us to stop, or what's the third thing? Just keep going. Mission, this full speed ahead.
Yeah, don't look back, and unless you'll turn into a pillar of salt, you don't want to do that.
Had a Z Nation podcast, right?
Yeah. JSS. JSS.
JSS. All right. Anyway, so good stuff. Josh, I know we had the Mr. Robot part one of the season finale on Wednesday. Now that Rami Malek has won an Emmy, are you even more pumped up for the part two of the finale?
Yes, of course. I'm so stoked for the finale. That's coming up this week. We'll have some coverage with Antonio from the supermarket, and I are going to be talking about season two's finale later this week. I'm amped up. Mr. Robot, I've always thought this show has been fantastic. Forget all the sophomore slump talk. I think that it's doing really well. So I'm excited to see how it closes out.
Yeah, okay. And Alex, have you been following the Mr. Robot of it all?
You know, I crushed the first season as it aired, and with the second season, I've been waiting to binge it all and do it all in one sitting, because that's really how I enjoy lots of things.
Okay.
So I'm not.
All right, well,
you curious to get your take after you do that, Alex. I would love to know how
podcast.
That worked out for you. Special
cool.
podcast, special emergency.
Yeah. All right. And of course, we're going to have our Emmy coverage up on postshowrecaps.com. You can check that out. If you want to hear about just Rami Malek and not get any Mr. Robot spoilers there, you can check that out on postshowrecaps.com. And then pretty soon, the march towards the real Walking Dead is coming. Also, Josh and I are going to be working on some post-show recap specials coming up here at the end of September. So be on the lookout for that.
No spoilers, but we've got some fun shows in the hopper. Yep. I'm excited. It's
going to
be good.
Josh, you want to just highlight what's going on in Lost Lives?
Lost Lives is still happening. A little bit delayed. Like, I don't know if I'm getting one out per week, but that's because these are like 3-hour podcasts. They've turned to be quite monstrous, but it's been really fun. Lost Lives, we've been doing some limited edition podcasting about talking about Lost, doing mini episode recaps. My wife and I are doing those. Very funny. Emily's knowledge about Lost always cracks me up. And we also are talking about the idea of Lost 2 is what I have dubbed what a Lost reboot might be. So we've been doing some fanfic in those podcasts. It's been very, very entertaining to me. We'll have a few more of those coming up over the next few weeks before we close it out. So would love for you guys to check that out. postshowrecaps.com/lost iTunes.
All right, everybody. So let us know what you think. Looking forward to hearing what you have to say. Take care, everybody. Bye.